May the Lord be with us now in our minds and in our hearts. Well, greetings from Debenham Churches, the United Reformed Church, where Johnny preached earlier this month, the Forge Church, St. Mary's, the Parish Church, and the North Bosmere Benefice, who run excellent Zoom services twice a week and have kept us going throughout the pandemic, even when we had 3 months on a canal boat last summer. Holiday. I hope you can hear the sound effects. Elijah and Elisha, the big playoff. Are you ready for it? Remember that film? Pub quiz question. Why does the film Chariots of Fire have that title when Elijah isn't mentioned once? I don't know the answer. You'll have to look it up later. But before we get too distracted by that fantastic film, let's return to our story. Next slide, please. Featuring in one corner, Elijah, the greatest prophet that ever lived. In the other corner, the upstart Elisha, his chosen assistant and successor. Who will be the greatest in the end? Perhaps Elisha, who apparently did twice as many miracles as Elijah. Or maybe it'll be Elijah, who appeared at Jesus' transfiguration and gained a great reputation. Because he was not seen to die, many Jews thought he would turn up again. I must point out a flaw in these pictures. All representations of Elijah's being taken up to heaven show Elijah in the chariot, but he was in a whirlwind, not the chariot, the Bible says. Why have they got it wrong? Most likely it's just artistic license. They both look incredibly old in this painting, but I imagine Elisha to be, say, in his 20s, and Elijah perhaps 40, which was still pretty old for the 9th century BC. However, Elisha became prophet in Israel for six decades, 892 to 832 BC, roughly, so he might have been even younger at this point. Now, we have a map of Israel. Next slide, please. As it was in the 9th century BC. And to get it in context, we're talking about the northern kingdom here, after King Rehoboam, as foolish as his father Solomon was wise, upset everyone so much that 10 tribes rebelled in about 922 BC and separated from Judah, an early precursor of Brexit, perhaps. Elijah prophesied from 875 to 848 BC, according to my study Bible, and that's 27 years, a fair time, whereas Elisha's time lasted 50 or 60 years. In Elijah's time, King Ahab was in power, a weak king dominated by his wife Jezebel. Elijah was always on the run somewhere, usually from King Ahab, his nemesis. And like Eric Liddell in Chariots of Fire, he was a great runner. He even outran Ahab's chariot, assisted by God on that occasion. Next slide. And so you see, he's going up to Zarephath on the left, and then he goes from Zarephath down to Samaria, where Ahab had his palace, apparently. And then he's off to Mount Carmel. And the next one, you see him go from Mount Carmel down to Beersheba and then down to Mount Sinai. And then he goes back to Israel. And now we have a cultural moment. Here are a few illustrations of Elijah and Elisha, all taken from Wikipedia. They don't have dates, unfortunately. The first one is Elijah reading from the Old Testament scrolls, we presume, might not be the daily newspaper. And the next one, Elijah in the wilderness. Can you see him at the bottom being fed by ravens? It doesn't look much like Israel. And then the next one, Elijah with the widow of Zarephath. He brought a widow's son back to life. And then the next one is a stained glass window in America. At Mount Carmel, he outsmarted the prophets of Baal, 1 Kings 18, and killed 450 of them. There ought to be a song about that, really. Something like, Elijah beat the prophet of Baal, Baal, Baal. Elijah beat the prophets of Baal, and they all started cutting their wrists, or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, Queen Jezebel was most displeased. And then next, we have Mount Carmel, apparently, with the statue of Elijah there. Next one, Elijah destroying the messengers of Ahaziah. Now, Ahab's son, King Ahaziah, had an accident, but Beelzebub failed to heal him, being the false god he was. So Elijah, now joined by Elisha, we presume, told Ahaziah's messengers, well, serves you right for consulting an idol. You're going to die on your bed. Oh, Ahaziah summoned Elijah, but he didn't like being told what to do. So he called down fire on the first 50 soldiers who came to fetch him, and then the second 50. But the third captain had more sense, and he pleaded with Elijah. So Elijah and Elisha went to Ahaziah and told him to his face that he was going to die bedridden, and he did. Next, we have a statue of Elijah, not looking in a very peaceful mood. So Aleppo in Syria. Next one, one of Elijah going up in the chariot of fire. Not a funicular railway, I don't think. Looks a bit like that. And next one, Elijah being fed by ravens again. Next one, Elijah at the transfiguration with Moses and Jesus. And then a Russian icon of Elisha. Now Elisha, yeah. And finally, bears savaging the goose at Elisha's command. Well, that was something that happened after Elijah had left the building, as it were. But strangely, we see the chariot again. We know it isn't Santa Claus because there are no reindeers. Well, that's enough culture. So we can go back to the main topic. Last week, Ben talked about aspirations. What aspirations did Elisha have before being plucked from nowhere? His family were not poor, though they may have objected when he killed their 12 oxen and barbecued them using the yokes for the big feast. Clearly, he was very pleased to be asked to serve this great prophet and be his successor. And that's as much as we know directly from the Bible about the relationship between Elijah and Elisha. In other words, not much. But reading between the lines, it was a close one. While Elisha was with him, there were only two incidents involving Elijah. There was the judgment on Ahaziah mentioned earlier, and there was the one involving Naboth's vineyard. Now, you may know that, but briefly, King Ahab wanted it to grow vegetables because it was near his palace. But Naboth refused to sell it because he couldn't. It was in his inheritance. Jezebel was incensed and got Naboth stoned to death on trumped up charges. Then Elijah and Elisha, we presume, confronted Ahab with some very bad news about his future and said Jezebel would die and her blood would be licked up by the dogs. Ahab grovelled before God and was spared for a time, so Elijah must have been one scary man. And that song, My God is So Big, would have been his theme tune, I think. Now, in the passage we read, Elisha said, I swear by my loyalty to the living Lord and to you that I will not leave you. That he says it twice. Elijah announces that he's off now to the next life, apparently. Anything you want me to do for you? Well, yes, as it happens, Elisha would like a double portion of his spirit. Now, that possibly refers to a rather strange reference in Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 17, where it says, if a man marries again, the firstborn son should get twice as much inheritance as the rest of the sons. So he wasn't left out, as it were. It could refer to that, and not asking for twice as much power. Well, Elijah goes off in a whirlwind, so Elisha is in grief. He tears his own cloak in two and presumably puts on Elisha's. Elisha strikes the Jordan and the water divides. There are echoes here of Moses, Joshua, and Elijah had just done it as well. He has Elijah's spiritual inheritance after all. And he goes off to do even more miracles than Elijah. Some say the double portion meant he did twice as many miracles. Well, what's the message here? What do we take from it? It was a hierarchical relationship, but one which was very close. In Debenham, we have a small weekly Ignatian meditation group, and I asked them to meditate on this passage recently. This was my meditation as Elisha. I was appointed out of the blue to be Elijah's successor. Elijah, the greatest prophet alive. Why me? What an honor. I don't know. But I rushed to tell my parents, and they weren't happy about me sacrificing our 12 oxen and using the yokes for the bonfire. I was with Elijah a couple of years, I guess, his constant companion and assistant. But I didn't have any of his superpowers. I learnt about everything he'd done, defeating the prophets of Baal, for instance. And while I was with him, we went out to sort out King Ahab, who'd stolen Naboth's vineyard. And when King Ahaziah tried to summon him, he called down fire on 50 soldiers twice. Now, one day at Bethel, Elijah told me he was going off on his own. Why? I couldn't understand it, and I told him so. Three times I told him. Then some prophets turned up and kept telling me Elijah was going to be taken away from me, but I didn't want to know. He asked me what I wanted. Well, what do you say when a great prophet asks you for a final request, as it were? I didn't want to let him down as his successor, so I asked for the full share of his spirit. He made no promise. What happens next? Unlike the only other person who didn't die, that's Enoch, who was and was not, Elijah then made a very dramatic exit. A chariot of fire, horses, a whirlwind, and Elijah was gone. Then I knew that God had granted my request. Though Elijah had gone, God was still with me. So much I'd seen and learned about God, being bold and fearless. Could I step into his shoes or his mantle or cloak? Yes, I could, apparently. My emotions were overwhelming me. Awe, wonder, loss, mourning, trepidation, and excitement. I mourned the loss of his friendship, his leading by example and his teaching. Yet here I was, starting off on my own journey. I would miss him, but I had God's spirit. Well, in our group, another suggested Elijah just wanted to be on his own. Some people on their deathbeds are like that. They wait for their visitors to leave, and then they give up their spirit. It's a private thing. Another person saw how close their bond was in both directions, like father and son. Elisha didn't want Elijah to go, but God pushed them apart with the chariot and horses. Another member saw them receiving grudging respect from the people, but the people only paid lip service to what Elijah said. They just carried on with their idol worship. There were pockets of loyalty, though. Elijah was a figurehead standing up to Ahab. He had his moments of despair, but he was bold. And where would we be without him? Elisha felt inadequate. He couldn't be the leader. He said to Elijah, "Are you coming back?" Elisha had to take up the mantle. And had he got the gift? Yes, he recrossed the Jordan, back to real life, as it were. And yet our other member felt Elisha's stubbornness, a bit like Ruth in following Naomi back to Israel. It was a big sacrifice. Elisha didn't listen to God, perhaps, but Elijah wanted Elisha to trust him. Elisha was so loyal, he couldn't bear to leave him. So what did God have to do to separate them? Well, Elijah went out with a bang. Their relationship would have been a disciple-teacher friendship. Have you ever been friends with your teacher? Or your pupils, if you're a teacher? That can get you into trouble, of course, particularly between opposite sexes. Or friends with your church minister, when you had a church minister. I've had some great ones, Alan Kippax in Ipswich, John Peck, and learnt a great deal from them, but I don't know if I'd have called them friends exactly. Perhaps if I'd been their personal assistant, going around with them everywhere for a couple of years or more, it would have been different. Then there's Patrick Cotton, who was a former vicar in Debenham. He did become a friend, though, and we often had fascinating discussions. And then there are other hierarchical relationships which could become friendships, possibly, employer and employee, parent and child, relationships of class, like upper and lower class, thankfully less common now, business and customer, master and servant, and then Jesus and his disciples, which comes later in this series. So as we read in John's Gospel, chapter 15, Jesus told them they were no longer servants, but his friends. Did they feel the same way, I wonder? Jesus wanted them at the same level, ultimately, and he laid down his life for his friends and us. What are friends? Are they just an American TV series or some button you click in Facebook? I won't give you a definition because stories like Elijah and Elisha show us more clearly what friends are. And there's David and Jonathan, another Old Testament example. What are friends for? I'm sure you can answer that for yourselves, but certainly for mutual support, to share life and experiences with, to do things you can't do on your own, like playing games or singing in choirs. How do you make friends? Usually by choice, although not for Elisha, apparently. It takes time and shared experiences and trust. Usually some proximity, common interests or activities. Shared meals or holidays help. And while on our three-month narrowboat holiday, it was difficult to make friends because we were always traveling. Certainly social media and mobile phones have helped a lot with that sort of situation, even for long distance lorry drivers. But COVID hasn't helped at all. My mum can make friends very easily, even on a train or a bus, despite being actually a shy person. But I haven't found it easy at any time. When I was young, I was extremely shy, and then I really had Asperger's syndrome when older. As a boy, I had one great friend, Donald Payne, across the road, but I joined the Scouts and the church choir. I never made friends at school, which can be quite a cruel place if you don't fit in. And at university, I joined the Christian Union and again made friends. Sometimes it's easier to make enemies than friends, I find. But by God's grace, I was lucky enough to be married to the lovely Sue, who sends her love to you, by the way. She's working this afternoon. And she is my best friend, of course. I have to say that. But you are my friends. In a church, you can't choose who else comes along, but you can get to know them and even to like them, God willing. We don't talk about friendship that much in church, but relationships are what make a church, or should do, a community of God's people. Jesus never went to church, by the way, so what would Jesus do doesn't always work. But we are a family of God's people. Nowadays, I'm involved with Debenham Shed, in which friendship and meeting together are very important. Men are not so good as women at making friends in general, and if you're single, it's made even more difficult in our very individualistic society. That's why we do things together, practical things, to build important relationships in community. But to conclude, what is the message we can take away from Elisha and Elijah? Well, firstly, make friends however you can, and don't let hierarchy get in the way of that. Secondly, value your friends, love and cherish them. And thirdly, value relationships in church, because that's what church is built on, or should be. And that's what I find very special about this church, as Dan said earlier. It is a church of friendship, and you shouldn't let anything get in the way of that friendship. Thank you.